We're doing Pirkei Avot, and we're up to the fifth chapter, the third Mishnah. And in this Mishnah, we were taught that Avraham Avinu had 10 tests, and he stood up to all of them. And the Rambam was enumerating the 10 tests, and we had seen the Rambam enumerated the tests, starting with his exile, our parsha. Rambam had learned that that was test number one, and then the Rambam learns the second one was the famine. The third one was the abduction of his wife Sarah. The fourth one was the war with the kings. The fifth one was when he had to marry his maid Hagar after having given up on having a child from Sarah. And the sixth one was the circumcision at such an advanced age. And that's those are in our parsha. The seventh is that the king of Gerar, the Philistine king Abimelech, took his wife Sarah. The eighth is having to send Hagar away. The ninth is having to send his son Yishmael away. And the tenth is the Akedah, the binding. So that we had seen already. Then the Rambam began discussing the 10 miracles. The Mishnah says 10 miracles occurred to our forefathers in Egypt and 10 by the sea. So the 10 in Egypt, the Rambam had said, was the fact that we didn't get the 10 plagues. The 10 miracles that happened to our forefathers was that the plagues landed on the Egyptians and not on our forefathers. The Mishnah then says 10 miracles happened to our forefathers by the sea when it came time to split the sea. So about that the Rambam says, "Aval ha'asara shayu al hayam kulam kabbalah." The 10 plagues that the Egyptians suffered by sea, these 10 are all tradition. Everything the Mishnah mentioned until now were things that we see in the Psukim. Now we're up to the 10 plagues by sea that we don't have in the Psukim. We don't have an indication as to the plagues that the Egyptians received when they were standing by the sea, but we have a tradition that it was so. Harishon shenivka lefi pshat ha'ktuvim ve'ibaku ha'mayim. The first is the actual splitting of the sea. Vanes ha'sheni, and the second miracle, shachar ibaku nitkamer ad shenasa ke'en tikra kmura. And the second one is that it took hold, it stood up, and it became like a ceiling. It took hold, and it was as though we had a ceiling above us. And then God made paths for us within the waterways. And the waters were to their right and to their left and above them, but they had a path. They had this path which was covered all around in water. Hashem, you breached the hole, so to speak. Hashem made us a tunnel through the waters of the Yam Suf. Vashlishi, the third miracle that our forefathers had by sea. Shekalka'o nitkashta v'kafalem kmo shamar halchu v'yabasha. That the land became dry. This is the bottom of the sea. The bottom of the sea is suddenly dry for them to walk on. V'lo nishal kekalka nchanim shem refesh v'tiv. And it wasn't like the bottom of the rivers, which are always muddy and they're like tar. And the fourth miracle our forefathers had by the sea, Shederach HaMitzriim bo hayta betit, tavik, v'umro chamar mayim rabim. And the fourth miracle was that when the Egyptians came and they tried to follow us into the sea, for them, the land became all muddy, and they got caught in the land, and they couldn't keep up the chase. We were running into the sea. For us, we were running on dry land. For them, they were running, and the land became muddy. And the fifth miracle was that God made 12 paths in the Yam Suf, and these 12 paths were a semicircle, meaning we came out on the Egyptian side. When we crossed the sea, we say we crossed the sea. We really came out on the Egyptian side. We went in, went around, came back out. It was like a rainbow. And you had 12 paths in this rainbow, 12 paths that went through the Red Sea, and the Egyptians followed. They didn't know which way we were coming out. So these 12 paths that were like this multiple rainbow, that is the fifth miracle. Vashishi, the sixth miracle that happened, I see, shekafa mayim v'nitkasha kavanim, that the water took hold, they became hard like a rock. Val ze ne'emar, shavarta roshei taninim al hamayim. Klomar, shenitkasha hamayim ad kedei sheishtabu alav harashim. The sixth miracle is that the water became hard like rocks, like the verse says, you broke the heads of the serpent, you broke the heads of this crocodile by the waters, which is a reference to the Egyptians that were broken by the waters of the sea. And the idea is that the water took hold, the water became hard to the extent that you could break one's head on it. Vashvi'i, and the seventh miracle, shelo kafa kekerach kolomar chaticha achat. The seventh miracle is that it did not become one solid ice. It didn't become all one solid piece when the sea split. Ela meforad umchula kilu em avanim tzvurim zo al zo. But rather, when they looked to their right, it looked like it was an Eskimo's home. Look, what's an Eskimo's home called?
Igloo.
It looked like there were blocks of ice, one on top of the other. The sea, when it split, didn't become like one solid rock, one solid piece of ice, but rather, when they looked to their sides, they saw pieces like stones, one on top of the other. That's what the verse says, God, you made the sea into grains, like grains of sand, because it became pieces, one on top of the other. Vashmini, the eighth miracle, shekafak is chuchito kesapil, that the sea froze like glass or sapphire, klomar, shakuf, meaning it was see-through, acheru elu et elu, bizman masambo, to the point where they could see one another. They'd wave, one tribe to the other would wave, they could see. It was like they were looking through glass. That's what the verse indicates, that God made the water so. Klomar, shitgavshut otam amayim ayu ke'etzem ha'shamayim shehu shakuf. Meaning the waters, when they took a solid form, God made it that they would be clear, as though you were looking at the clear sky. They could see through it, they could see one another. Vatshi, the ninth miracle, shayun nozelim imenu mayim metukim neshtiyah, that there would be water dripping, and that water would be sweet, that they could take drinks as they were going through the sea. And the tenth, Masiri, the tenth miracle, Shayu kof'im b'shat nezilatam, achar shayu lokhim me'maim lishtot, kedei shelo yordu lakarka. That they'd have this fountain that would be dripping water, they'd take a drink, and then the water would freeze. It wouldn't hit the ground. They wouldn't have puddles all around. God would make it refreeze before it would hit the ground. That's what the verse describes in the song of Avad Ziyashir. That God made it freeze and then drip for us to drink and then freeze before it hit the ground again. So you had these like, you'd have frozen, you'd have blocks of frozen ice. The ice would be see-through and it was a path. They'd even have a ceiling, and you'd have these drips of fountain, but they wouldn't hit the floor, they wouldn't make a puddle, they'd refreeze before they hit the floor. Uva'od ba'kabbalah, she'erdu al ha'mitzrim makot al ha'yam yoter mimakot mitzrayim. And we have a further tradition that the Egyptians had plagues by the sea more than they had in Egypt. Ela she'kulam ayu me'otam aseret ha'minim she'erdu b'mitzrayim, but they were of that type, they were of the species of plagues that they had in Egypt, they were just worse. But God made new types of the 10 plagues by the sea. And the allusion to this we find in the pasuk that they said, it wasn't by the sea, but rather when the Aron was abducted, when the Philistines took the ark, so then the Philistines started being punished. And the Philistines said, we better be careful because these are the gods that hit the Egyptians with all forms of plagues in the desert. What does it mean? The Egyptian plagues were in Egypt. What does it mean the plagues were in the desert? That's a reference to the plagues that the Egyptians suffered by the desert that bordered the Yamsuf. Klomar b'midbar Yamsuf. So the verse in Samuel, the book in Shmuel, is indicative of this tradition that we have that the Egyptians were hit with plagues by the sea. But the Mishnah concludes and tells us another thing that we have 10 of in the Torah. The Mishnah says that our forefathers tested God. They tried God 10 times. So that, says Maimonides, that is explicit in the verses. So we said, 10 tests of Avram are explicit in the verse. 6 in our parsha, and 7, 8, 9, 10 in next week's parsha. The 10 miracles that our forefathers had in Egypt was that they didn't suffer from the plagues. Okay, that we saw in the verses. The 10 miracles our forefathers had by the sea, that's a tradition. That's not written explicitly. The 10 plagues that the Egyptians had in Egypt, okay, that's clear. That's in the Pasuk. And the 10 plagues that the Egyptians had by sea, that's not in the Pasuk, but we have an allusion in Shmuel. The ten times that our forefathers tested God, that's in the Pasuk. And now the Rambam is going to enumerate them. Harishon b'Yamsuf, the first time was when we came to the Yamsuf. We were being chased by the Egyptians. The Jews turned to Moshe and they said, "Be'omram hamibelin kivarim b'mitzrayim." They said to Moshe, was there a shortage of graves? He had to take us out here to die. Was there a shortage of graves in Egypt? Vasheni, the second time they tested God, so to speak, b'mara, when they camped, their first camping was in a place called Mara. Huomro, that's what the verse says, v'ilonu am al Moshe lemo manishte. The nation started whining and saying, what are we going to drink now? Vashlishi, the third time was b'midbar sin, when we came to the desert of Sin, kasher bikshu taman, when they asked improperly for the man, hu amram, that's what the people said to Moshe, miiten mutenu biyad Hashem, we wish we would have died in the hands of Hashem back then. Why did we come out here to die this gruesome death, to die of hunger? They shouldn't have spoken that way. Valvi, the fourth time they acted improperly towards God, shimru bo tiram in aman lemachorat, that they rebelled when God said, finish your man each day's portion, tomorrow you get a new portion. The very first day, they left over some man. Who says we're going to have more tomorrow? So that was rebellious, that was wrong. Kmo she'amar ve'lo shamu el Moshe, the verse says, the people did not listen to Moshe. When the man fell the first day, they ate some of it and they kept some for tomorrow. Ma'chamishi, the fifth, she'imru bevaksham oto biyom ha'shabbat, yatsu min ha'am nilkot ve'lo matzau. It says that God told them, you will have man 6 days a week, and on the seventh day there will be no man outside. Do not go out there to look for it. And the nation didn't listen. People went out and did look to see. Maybe man fell today as well. Nashishi, the sixth, birfidim alamaim, when it came to refidim, when they again complained about the waters. Vashvi'i, the seventh thing they did improperly in the desert, bechorev b'maseh egel, when they set up the golden calf in Chorev, just after receiving the Torah. Vashmini, the eighth, b'tavera, b'istavkam b'oto ha'makom b'musagei ha'emet, when we hit the place called Tavera, and the people started doubting basic philosophical concepts, basic concepts of Judaism. V'nitmaldu, v'umro v'yam kemitoninim, the nation started complaining, but really, they were really questioning basic things. Does God really know what's going on, etc.? Vashii, and the ninth, b'kivot ha'tava, b'sheilat ha'basar, when they came to the place called Kivot ha'tava, they started saying, hey, we want more meat. Amar v'asafsuf shel b'kirbo, it says the asafsuf, those that joined, they started complaining, we want meat. We remember all the good meat we had back in Egypt. V'asiri, and the tenth thing they did improperly in the desert, b'midbar paran b'inyanam raglim, when they sent the spies in the desert, they sent the spies to spy out the land. V'sham ne'emar, and there the verse explicitly says, God says, I've had it. V'ainasu tizeh so pamim, here 10 times they've tried me, that's it. Now they're going to stay in the desert for 40 years. So those are the 10 things that they did improperly in the desert. The next Mishnah, now we're up to Mishnah Dalit in the 5th chapter. Sure.
And so, Kassim Yamsov, it was actually tunnels. It wasn't just like one open valley.
Right.
So there were tunnels. And you said that they went in a rainbow fashion back over to the Egyptian side.
Correct.
So you didn't cross.
Correct.
So you say in Egypt.
Correct.
When did they cross?
They didn't. They went around it. They went around and then they crossed the Jordan when it came time to enter the land of Israel. Uh-huh. Had they gone, they didn't. They continued going all around through the desert. Yeah.
They went around what? They went around what?
They went out into the desert through the Sinai Desert. They didn't go through the Yam Suf. They didn't cross through the sea and enter north to the land of Israel. They didn't enter directly. They went out into the desert, went and travels throughout the desert, and then they came back into the land of Israel, closer to the northern border of the land of Israel, going through the Jordan.
They were marking most of the the west side of Lebanon now. Yeah? The west side of Lebanon, if you know that.
Why do you say west?
The western side of the Gilad Mountains. Eastern side of the Gilad Mountains.
The eastern side, right.
Yeah. Western side of Lebanon.
I'm not sure.
Well, what we call Lebanon today?
I don't think so. They were further south than that.
They must have been in Lebanon if they had to cross the Jordan.
At some point they got to Lebanon.
Yeah. Okay.
We used to have a big map here.
Of course, because the Negev was in Israel. So they walked through the Negev, obviously.
They were south. They spent much of their time southeast. Mishnah Dalet. Asra Nisim Nasu Bebet HaMikdash. 10 miracles were constant in the temple, and here the Mishnah enumerates this time. This time that it says 10, it tells us what the 10 were. Number 1, Lo Yipila Isha Merech B'Sal Kodesh. A woman never miscarried from the smell of the holy meat. Ordinarily, when a woman smells meat, that can really cause different things to happen to her when she's pregnant. But the meat of the temple, even though there was a lot of meat being roasted, there was a lot of barbecue going on there, that never had that impact on a woman. Ve'lo yisrich b'sal kodesh me'olam. Nor did the holy meat ever go rotten. That's unusual. It's a pretty warm place, so they'd keep it on the floor to keep it cool, and they had ways of keeping flies away. But at the end of the day, that the meat would never go rotten, you have two and a half days to eat it, that's unusual. Ve'lo yirak keri l'kohen gadol b'yom kippurim. The Kohen Gadol never was defiled from an emission on Yom Kippur. So you have hundreds of years, many Kohanim Gedolim, it never happened. He's away from his wife a whole week. Never happened. That's considered a miracle. And they never saw a fly in the place where they'd cut up the meat. And when they'd have the Omer sacrifice and they'd harvest it and they'd sift it and any small kernel, any small stone could disqualify it, it never happened. It was never disqualified. Uvishte alechem, or in the two breads, uvelechem apanim, or the bread that was there from Shabbos to Shabbos, the 12 loaves of bread. Velochiboag shamim tetzeh maracha, and the rains never put out the flame that was on the altar, even though it was under the open sky. So the waters should have put it out. Never happened. Velonitzcha ruach et amude ashan, and there was a pillar of smoke coming up from the altar, and it was never moved by the wind. It had a steady stream. Omdim tzfufim, when people would stand in the temple, they'd feel crowded. Umishtachavim revachim. But when they'd bow, everyone would feel like there was enough room for him to bow. Velozik nachash v'akrav b'Yerushalayim me'olam. And a snake and a scorpion never harmed anyone in Jerusalem. Velo amar adam lechavero, tzar li ha'makom she'alin b'Yerushalayim. And no one ever said, it's too crowded for me to spend the night in Jerusalem. There was always ample room for everyone. So these are miracles. These are the 10 miracles that were in the temple. The Rambam says, you already know that the altar is in the middle of the Azara, that room which is called the Azara in the temple, and we'll explain this further in its proper place. And it was under the open heaven. And nonetheless, the rains never put out its fire. And the smoke would go up in a steady stream from the sacrifices, and the wind would never overcome it. So the Rambam says it's not that the wind never overcame the smoke, but every time they'd bring a sacrifice, suddenly the winds would die down. You'd have a calm, serene atmosphere. And if you think about it, that's a phenomenal concept. It's as though the Shekhinah is coming. Everything calms down. There are no winds now. The Omdin Ba'azara, echad b'tzad ha'sheni, and they'd be standing one right next to the other in the azara. You'd think there's no room to bow. Everyone's right next to one another. U'bishat eshte chavaya, lo yu bein lidei dachak, v'lo yu lochatzin zetze, le'otzem rigshei kavod ha'makom ahu. The Rambam gives a natural explanation. He says, people had such respect for the temple that no one would push one another. When it came down time to bow down, no one was pushing one another. I don't know, with the Rambam giving us that explanation, then what about the miracle? You know, the Mishnah says it was a miracle. So I think there's room to think about how the Rambam works that out.
But, I mean, the temple was destroyed because people and respect each other and were speaking Lashon Hara, but they had enough respect not to push each other.
That's what it says. It says that the Kohanim people were so careful when it came to the temple. So in the time of the first temple, even though they were pagans and they were adultering and they were doing a lot of improper things, they were murdering, they said, Echal Hashem, Echal Hashem, Echal Hashem. They said, we have the temple, we're not going to lose. I mean, they could be worshipping Zeus, but at the same time, they knew if the temple's with us, there's no way they could win us. It was a mistake. It was overconfidence. God said, no, you can't do that. I'm not going to let you get away with that. But we see that there was that relationship to the temple. And in the time of the second temple, so the Talmud tells us that they used to have a contest to see which Kohen would make it up the ramp first. And that Kohen would be entitled with part of the service for that day. So they'd have a race, right? So one time they're running up the ramp and two Kohanim are neck and neck. Now the Kohanim, they used to slaughter animals in the temple, so they carried knives on them. So one drew a knife and stabbed the other. So he made it first, right? He made it first up the ramp. The other guy is lying on the floor, writhing in blood, and his father comes and pulls out the knife and says, don't worry, don't worry, the holy knife of the temple was not defiled, I pulled it out before he died. That's what his father says. So the Talmud says, look what was going on here. They were more concerned about the defilement of the holy knife than the fact that his son is dying over there on the floor. What's wrong with them? So that the Talmud says that one of the rabbis came and gave a whole long eulogy and a whole long speech and tried to explain to them, guys, what's wrong with you? This isn't the way it's supposed to be. But we see that it was the way it was. You see that people still had such reverence for the place that the Kohen's own father draws out the knife and says, don't worry, I saved the knife. That's what you're thinking about. You know, his own son is there. But we see that even in the time of the second temple, where they weren't respecting one another, they had tremendous respect for the temple. The temple was still something else. Okay, we'll pick up here, Bezalel Hashem, next time.